Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy Bradley Thompson here, and we are back with another episode of the Living the Canadian Dream podcast. We are here today, audio only, because today's interview is going to be a Skype interview. So it's only audio. So don't worry if you do not see me if you're watching the YouTube video. But before we start today's episode, I want to talk about who this person is, how we connected, and why they are on the podcast. So for episode 42, we were approaching November, and I wanted to have on somebody who has, a really good message for the month of November. November being Remembrance Day. Remembrance Day is something that, a lot of people take for granted. It's just a day in the year. And a lot of people don't really get impacted by the day because they're so busy with their regular life. So what I wanted to do is, on this platform, have somebody who is making an impact and doing something memorable in the world of highlighting the things that have happened and the people that fought for our freedom. So I found this person online through an article in the news. And I watched his trailer. He is a filmmaker, and he is currently making a documentary called Last One Standing. This individual's name is Eric Brunt, and he has spent over a year traveling across Canada in a van, going from city to city, interviewing over 400 Canadian World War II veterans. Absolutely incredible. He sat down with these individuals. He ate lunch with them, which you're going to find out. And he had real conversations and found out their story. He was inspired by his grandfather, who was in the war. And some of the stories that he has to tell are just absolutely incredible. And they will change your perspective. And I think this episode is very important, especially for Remembrance Day, because it's something that a lot of us take for granted. Especially my generation, the generations after the war, we never had to experience the things that these World War II veterans had to experience. People nowadays in my world are complaining over Instagram posts, complaining and getting offended over Facebook posts that don't matter at all. These are first world problems. These are things that only we can experience, because we don't have the problems that the individuals before us had. We don't experience war on our home soil. We don't experience famine like a lot of countries do still. We don't experience constant survival. We're very lucky. We have freedom. We have opportunities in this country because of those who fought for our freedom. The World War II veterans, often that you do not hear about, the Canadian World War II veterans. And that's why this conversation is so important. That's why Eric's documentary is so important. Because a lot of times in the world of Remembrance Day and hearing about World War II, you don't often hear about the Canadian veterans. We live so close to the USA that you hear about the American veterans, you hear about American war stories, and you get that from obviously Hollywood, from the media, all that sort of stuff. But something that we don't regularly hear is from our own veterans, the veterans that were on our home soil, the veterans that fought for Canada and gave Canada the freedom that we have today. So that's why this episode is so important. So what I want you to do is please listen to this episode, but not only listen to this episode, please follow Eric Brunt's journey. He has a website. You can follow it at ericbruntmedia.com. That is ericbruntmedia.com. This will give you all of the information about his documentary, but also it'll give you information about what he's doing now, where he is at in the film editing process and when the film's going to come out. You can also donate by going to this website. If you can, if you have the money to donate, please donate to support this film because it deserves to be heard. There are so many people, grandparents of individuals, you know, great-grandparents of some individuals, great-great-grandparents of some individuals that have fought in the war and fought for our freedom. So please support this this documentary. If you cannot donate, if you have connections in the film industry, make sure you hit up Eric Brunt because he deserves the support, because he is doing incredible work right now. He is highlighting incredible individuals that are willing to share their story. So please do that. If you do not have connections, if you don't have the money to support, that's okay. Please share his information so the rest of the world can see. He's posted trailers. He's posted short interviews that are going to be highlighted in the overall film. So whatever you can do to support, make sure you support this awesome campaign, because as a Canadian, as somebody that's living in Canada, these are the stories that really deserve to be heard. On a regular basis, we're hearing stories about Kim Kardashian, the latest drama online. These are the stories that really matter. Okay, we don't need to hear about the latest Nikes or Supreme gear. These are the stories that really matter when it comes to our lives and our history. So please support. Other than that, without further ado, we're going to hop into this episode. It's a very good episode. I'm really happy I was able to sit down and connect with Eric. He's met a lot of awesome individuals, and he highlights a few of them in here and then summarizes what the whole point of the project was and what he learned throughout the process. So without further ado, here is episode 42 of the Living the Canadian Dream podcast. One of the reasons I'm able to call it the Living the Canadian Dream podcast, because we are able to live our dreams in Canada. It's corny, but it's true. So without further ado, here is episode 42 of the Living the Canadian Dream podcast with Eric Brunt, the filmmaker for the documentary coming out soon next year, Last One Standing. Living the Canadian Dream. Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Bradley Thompson, here, and we are back with another episode of the Living the Canadian Dream podcast. Today, we got a special interview via Skype. Once again, my favorite video audio platform that always crashes, Skype. Today I'm joined here with a special guest, somebody that I kind of found online. He is on the other side of the country. His name is Eric Brunt. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you for having me on the show, Brad.
Yeah, no worries. So I'll tell you sort of what Eric is about, just on a vague scale, why I found him online. And then we'll go into it. Okay. So basically I was sort of online. I came across a documentary, a trailer, and it was The Last One Standing, and I shot you a message and we just connected super quick. And this was like, what was it, like a week ago or 2 weeks
ago?
It was super quick. So yeah, it was really cool. You were in a news article. I think it was Vancouver Sun or something. I don't remember which one it was.
That was sent for last week for sure.
Yeah. So that's what I came across, and I looked up your doc and stuff like that. I'm just like, oh, I definitely want to have you on, especially because it's November and Remembrance Day.
Certainly.
And it's just great to sort of touch on the stuff that you touch in your documentary. So if you can introduce yourselves for everybody, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. So my name's Eric Brunt. I am indeed on the other side of Canada. I'm in Victoria, BC, so almost about as west as you can get. Yeah. And I went to film school at UBC in Vancouver, and I was at school when my grandfather passed away, and he was a World War II veteran. And that made me realize, I guess, just how little I did know about his service. I knew that he served in Canada. I knew that he'd spent 5 years doing that. I didn't know a ton about what exactly he did. And it kind of made me wish that I did know that. And I had asked those questions while he was still living. It kind of inspired me to reach out to some local veterans in the Vancouver area and make a short film. And that short film was actually called Last Men Standing. And it was eight Second World War veterans in Vancouver. And I kind of did that for a class, actually, and fell in love with the whole process of the documentary filmmaking and hearing from these pretty awesome guys. And it made me think that, well, this is just Vancouver. I wonder what else is out there in BC and even greater, the whole rest of Canada. So it was sort of this idea that was sitting in my head for a long time, and I tried to get some funding for it, but unfortunately couldn't wrestle anything up. So I saved up my own money, got a van, and took off across the country for a little over a year trying to interview as many veterans as I could.
That's so cool, man. That's like, honestly, thank you for doing this, because this is such a cool thing, but also something that needs to be done.
For sure.
Especially for Canadian veterans. Like, you never hear about the stories, all of these people that, you know, fought for our freedom. Mm-hmm. And it's just an amazing thing that you're doing. And that's why I wanted you on. You're just like, not only are you a great filmmaker, I've already seen, like, obviously a bunch of your trailers and short clips and stuff like that, which are great. But just the whole theme behind it is just a fantastic, it's just a fantastic piece to touch on. So why did you, so you did it in, so you started it when you were at school.
Yeah.
And you highlighted eight people.
Yeah.
Who were those eight people? Did your grandfather know those eight people, those other people?
The eight people were basically what happened was, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's Royal Canadian Legions in every city and every town. There's, there's probably like over 500, if not more. And basically, I just cold emailed every Legion in Vancouver and Victoria, for that matter, and was like, hey, I think I was 22 at the time. Okay. This would have been 2015. Okay. And I said, hey, I'm doing this documentary. Do you have anybody who would be interested in talking to me? And sure enough, eight men appeared across the Vancouver and Victoria area. And I just, back then I was on the bus, so I just took my camera equipment on the bus and went to interview them.
That's awesome. For anybody that doesn't know what the Royal Canadian Legion is, can you explain briefly what that is?
Yeah, certainly. So it's basically a place that was set up after the First World War for veterans to get together and socialize, and also for fundraisers to be put on to generate money for veterans and the events that they want to put on. So basically, They're a staple of every small town, and they kind of there's a number of them in cities as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you definitely hear about the name, but you're never really taught that in school. Like, oh, this is what this, you know, group
totally
of people do. So like, people might not know what that is, but that's awesome. So you met these eight individuals, and then you just sat down with them. You brought your camera.
Yeah. Microphone and then
just interviewed them.
Yeah, and it was kind of crazy for me, because I'd never really done anything where you're completely welcome into a stranger's home and you sit down with them and get to know them for a while. And I mean, you think that maybe these interviews are going to be short, but you end up spending 2-3 hours with these people and really hearing about what they went through and kind of uncovering the other story. I like to make the comparison. You're kind of peeling back the layers, and sometimes it takes a few hours to do that. And then once you get to the end, sometimes you have some incredible stories. And so I kind of was blown away by that, and how I was just a stranger, and I was they were kind of letting me into their world. And I think the reason they were letting me into their world is, one, because I was around the age that they probably would have been during the war.
Yeah, for sure.
Two, that my grandpa was a veteran, so I kind of had that personal connection.
Yeah.
And I think maybe three is that the fact that I'm an outsider, interested in their stories, they didn't really have to, I think some people, they want to protect their families and not maybe say things that might hurt them. So by going into some of these darker stories, they were, me being a stranger, they were able to sort of just open up and talk about those things. So yeah, I think those three things kind of allowed that experience to happen. And that was sort of what pushed me to want to do more.
That's really cool. So when you sit down with these individuals, you say they're hours long. So like how often, like how long would you stay at somebody's house for, like to sort of talk to them and stuff like that?
So I'd say that, I'd say the average length would be an hour, but still there've been many that have gone. I think my longest one was like 8 hours long.
It
was
wow.
Crazy. Yeah. But, yeah, basically what happens is I'll just walk you through it. So I got their address from either a family member or themselves. I go to their house, I knock on their door, they let me in. We make small talk for a little bit. I try and make them as comfortable as possible. And then I ask if I can set my camera up, and they almost always say yes. And then get the camera set up. And that's when we really dive into the interview. And I mean, sometimes we have to go over time, over lunch or over dinner. And so afterwards, we sometimes we'll grab a bite to eat after. And it's always so funny because just for an example, this one veteran said, like, I got to take you to my favorite restaurant afterwards. I was like, okay, I'm into it. And he's like, it's like, it has the best burgers ever and you're going to love it. I'm like, okay, this is awesome. So that interview was probably 5 hours. We go to we jump in the car. He drives, he's like 95 and we go it's Harvey's. It's his favorite spot. So we're sitting in Harvey's and he's like, this place is great. You're going to make your own burger and get any toppings you want. And I'm like, yeah, that is actually pretty great. Like I'm into it. So
that was so funny.
Yeah. So that was just an example of how one day can go. But I mean, it's awesome. And you leave there with feeling like you've made a new friend.
Yeah, that's really cool. Do you still keep in touch with some of the people that you originally started interviewing? Yeah.
Definitely.
That's awesome.
Cool, because I find that their family members will also reach out after a while, whether
that's great.
Just heard about me or no matter what. And I always tell the veterans themselves that I give them my phone number and say, hey, if you want to talk, like I'm always in. So just last weekend, I was on the phone with a veteran from Thunder Bay that I interviewed for about half an hour. And he was just telling me how things were in Thunder Bay and just a way to catch up. And I love it. Like I love talking to these people, and if I can help them make a feel maybe a little less lonely on a weekend, then I'm always there. So I love catching up with them. And I don't like to think that I was just kind of in their life and out of it. Like I'm happy when they want to keep me in their life and keep in contact. That's a real rewarding part of it.
Yeah, that's really good. And then they know like they have a connection, and then this person's going to tell their story
totally
the proper way. Which is great. That's really cool. So you did this initial school documentary and then you sort of started getting into it a little bit more and you sort of wanted to expand. Is that sort of how
it
developed?
And kind of, it was a bit put on hold because I graduated university in 2016. Mm-hmm. So a year after I made that short, and then I had to basically had bills to pay and had to work. So kind of entered the workforce in Vancouver, but it was always on the top of my head. I was like, I gotta do this. Cause it was just a passion of mine. And my friends were like, you gotta just do it. And I said, okay, I will. And so then, I guess 2 years later in, early 2018, I was like, I'm just going to do it. And that's when I, quit my job, moved out of the house I was living in, got the van and took off across Canada.
That's awesome. That's a big plunge. That's a really big plunge.
People still think I'm crazy, but people thought I was crazy then for sure.
Yeah. Cause obviously it's risky because you're following a passion. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things whenever it's something creative, people already think it's a risk, even though, you know, it's not necessarily a risk. You have a project. But just to leave everything behind to sort of just work on one thing. It's crazy. Yeah. It's a crazy story. It's really cool though. How long did it take you to get ready to sort of move out of, you know,
everything? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think of when I exactly decided, but I think it was probably around, I want to say like January. I was like, okay, it's like, I'm not going to be here in the summer. Cause it was originally going to be just a 4-month trip. So I was like, okay. I'm going to leave. I'm going to move out of the house I'm living in, beginning of May, and then I'm going to start the trip and be done by September.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a bit of money already saved up, but I actually quit my job around then and was working as just like a freelance videographer, picking up projects here and there, getting some more money in. And I was also doing a few interviews on the side of people I hadn't gotten yet in Vancouver, because I thought if I'm already here, I might as well do them. So just kind of warming up.
Sure.
And then May was when I took the plunge and gave up my lease and then started. Well, I guess I haven't mentioned it yet, but for the big majority of the trip, I was actually camping out of my van. So that was my accommodation as well as my workspace.
Awesome.
As well as my transportation to keep cost down low. So that's when I started, camping out of the van and slowly making my way across Canada. And sure enough, after 4 months that we're over, I think I just hit Thunder Bay. So I still had like all of Ontario to go and then Quebec and the Maritimes. So that's when I realized I'm going to need one more time, two more money. And so that's when I started a GoFundMe campaign up. And that's what allowed me to keep going until June of this year.
For sure. Awesome. That is an awesome story. So how was camping outdoors? Let's hit that first. How was that? How was camping across Canada?
So it was really good for the most part. I'm not a camper. So at first I was like, this is going to be not good, but it was fine. And I was able to stay at like friends' places across Canada as well, just for people I'd met UBC, which is great. And then it was starting to get cold in, I'd say, November. And then my last night camping in the van was January 3rd, and it was just like, I remember being negative 13 in Toronto.
That's crazy.
And I was like, this is too much. And then I started just staying at Airbnb. So just like a room in someone's house.
For sure.
And that's what I did for the rest of the trip. But yeah, I was in the van, I guess, from May till January, which was kind of crazy. But you got used to it really quickly, and it was converted. So it had like a bed in the back that could also be used as a couch that I could just like sit on and edit.
Awesome.
So it was super multi-purpose, and I was surprisingly fine. Like, I'm not a camper and I was able to do it.
That's awesome. So in terms of amenities, did you do it like in a camping style? Like, for water, you go to campsites and stuff like that? Like, for cooking, you go to campsites and make a fire? Like, how did it work?
So, I would, so sometimes I'd stay at campsites, but sometimes it's like you're in the middle of nowhere or even if you're in the city, I feel like it's really hard to find affordable campgrounds. Mm-hmm. So I would just kind of like, I would just park on the side of the street in some residential area and just, that'd be the spot for the night. So I'd have I'd have to go, I guess, usually go out for dinner that night or just get something where I could easily make without any stove. But other than that, I'd go the camping route. And then as it got colder, the campgrounds closed down. So I just had to, just camp on by like a field or in the residential area and just, hope for the best. Save a lot of money that way.
Yeah, for sure. I can imagine. That's really rough in it for sure. Especially if you don't have water and stuff. Yeah, that's
100%. I always made sure I had like a big water jugs if I ever needed water. But that was another thing, because as it got colder, the water started to freeze. So that's when I kind of laid down threw the towel into the rink, so to speak, and was like, "Hey, this can't be keep happening." But so I'd always have water, always have food. So it wasn't too hard. Like, I've traveled a bit in my life, and it wasn't like too hardcore traveling. But it was surprisingly easy.
That's really cool. Yeah, because like. There's like a few rock climbers I follow. I don't know if you ever watched the movie Free Solo.
It's amazing.
But Alex Honnold, where he lives out of his van and he's got like a stove and stuff. It's really cool. Yeah. That's the first time I really saw the inside of like the camp van life. So that's really cool that you did that.
Yeah, it is very much like that, except his is definitely nicer. And he has a stove, but seeing that movie, you definitely get a glimpse of what my life was like for sure.
Yeah, that's really cool. So when you're traveling across Canada, what sort of cities are you hitting or towns? Like, did you decide you're going to interview these people first and then set up the interview and then drive there? Like, how did it work?
So basically it was going back to the legions again. So I'd find every literally, I'd try and find every branch of the legion I could in a province, and then I'd contact them. And let's say, okay, let's choose a random one. Like, let's say Red Deer. They said, oh, we've got two Second World War veterans here. Mm-hmm. Do they want to talk to me? Yes, they do. So that means Red Deer's on the map all of a sudden. So basically, I'd go wherever I could find the veterans, and I'd stay forever long as I could. So, like, for example, Winnipeg randomly was a gold mine of veterans. So I ended up, I was like, oh, I'll probably be in Winnipeg for like 3 or 4 days, but I ended up staying there almost, I think almost 3 weeks, because I was finding so many in Winnipeg. So the trip was totally dictated by that. And as word of the trip grew, I started getting a bit of news coverage. Then I would have people reaching out to me. So it wasn't so much me making the reaching out to the legions. And then when that started happening, that also helped me plan the trip out a bit more, because I knew that, okay, there's this guy in this town in Quebec that I'm going to want to visit at one point. And that really helped me map it out more. But it was kind of I should draw out the trip that I did, because it's kind of zigzagging all over the country.
Yeah,
does not make any sense economically how I did it, but it just was the way I had to kind of go about things.
Yeah, for sure. Did you get any like referrals from individuals, like say like they knew other people?
Yeah, for sure. And there was somewhere, like for example, on a plane, if you're in the Air Force and you're on a plane, there was usually seven of you. And sometimes there'd be like another guy from that crew that was still living. And they'd be like, oh, when you get to like Peterborough, you should interview him.
And that's awesome. Yeah.
Or they'd be like siblings, or yeah, a lot of referrals from the veterans themselves. And that was awesome, because that meant that they kind of had an in. Like a lot of the time with the legions, they just give you their phone number and you'd have to kind of explain yourself over the phone. But if you had like a family member or a friend make the connection for you, then as soon as you call them, they're like, all right, when are you coming over? And you didn't have to like make a small pitch right away. So that made things easier for sure.
That's really cool. So have you gone all the way across Canada yet? You're sort of done?
Totally. In terms of
the trip? Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to, left Victoria in May, and then I got to St. John's, Newfoundland in April. And then, I got back to Victoria. I got back to Victoria in June.
Okay.
And to top that off, I got back, and then 2 days later, I flew to France for the 75th anniversary of D-Day, which was crazy. And then I came back, and then I'm done. I'm just editing now.
Wow. So how many interviews in total did you do throughout the entire trip? Because that's a crazy trip. That's a super long time.
Yeah.
A lot of hours. Yeah.
So I did just over 400.
Wow. That's crazy.
Almost one a day.
Wow, that's amazing though. That's incredible.
A lot of interesting stories and interesting people.
Yeah. So I guess you've met people from all different backgrounds, all different parts of the army and military. Like, what are the different areas that you sort of met people in and interviewed?
Like in terms of the military?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, the big ones are you got your army, you got your Air Force, you got your Navy, and then there's the Merchant Navy, which is, it's kind of like a regular person wouldn't know it, but there's technically a Navy and a Merchant Navy, and they're two separate things. So those are the four groups for the guys. And then there's the woman who fought, so there's that category. And then you have the category of people who went overseas, or people who stayed and either defended our coasts or trained people, like my grandpa did, and stayed in Canada. So there's, it's crazy, because I think that when people think of World War II, they think of like, I think usually Army. Like, I think usually they think of Saving Private Ryan and like,
what you usually think of,
but
I infantry think and stuff.
Totally, yeah. Like marching and like front lines, like that sort of stuff. But that's really a small part of it. Like, there's so much, there's so many cogs to the machine that that cog, for whatever reason, gets the most attention. But there's so many interesting different parts. And so, that was a big part of it, was trying to make sure everyone was being represented. And so when the documentary does come out, people not being like, oh, there's nobody from the Merchant Navy, or there's no woman in it. Then so that's the title changed, because the title is going to be Last Men Standing. But it soon became very apparent that there were thousands of Canadian women who served. So then it became Last One Standing.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. But then that way you're covering all bases, which is great because you're getting all these different perspectives and all these different stories in different areas of the military or just at different time periods. Did you find a lot of the people were, did you interview anybody before World War II, after World War II? Like
about was everybody, those experiences?
Yeah, like what was it sort of like basically everybody serving throughout World War II for like periods of time?
Yeah, so basically,
if that question makes sense,
basically the only prerequisite to talk to doing the interview is that you had to serve in the military and World War II at some time, so that kind of exited out wives and children, and just because they wanted those first-hand experiences,
of course, yeah.
And then I'm losing my train of thought here. So then from what was the question again?
So did you have anybody that like say maybe served before the like World War II started or like right after? Yeah.
So there were a lot of people who after they were in the military, it kind of became their life passion, and they continued to stay in the military. They maybe fought in the Korean War, which is something that doesn't get talked about. But just for the scope of my project, I just kept it to their military service in World War II. Mm-hmm. But within that, I always asked the veterans about their childhood and their upbringing because I thought that played a big, growing up in the Depression, I think had a big effect on them and allowed them to become the people they were in the war. So that was a big focus of the interview. And then I also talked about what it was like and how they were treated when they came back to Canada, because I thought that was a interesting part of it all. So that was...
Yeah, definitely an interesting topic. Yeah.
Yeah. So as these people have lived 90 years of life, like they could probably write whole books on their life, but that was the focus, was what made them who they were, the war years, and then just after the war years. So there were military experiences outside of that, but that was basically the focus.
The focus. Okay. Yeah. Cause I was wondering, I'm just like, because I'm sure some people, you know, probably served before World War II or served after World War II. So I wasn't sure like, yeah, what the sort of if you cover that stuff, that's really cool. So in terms of veterans and stuff like that, what were some of the most shocking stories or things that you heard throughout your interviews?
Yeah, so one that just popped up in my memory the other day is so kind of touching back on the woman. So I think that there's a lot of, like, for example, women weren't on the front lines. They weren't in the typical army roles that you see. But World War II really opened up all these new career paths for women as a result of a war being declared. So before the war, the teaching professions that were available as a woman, I think, were limited to basically a nurse, a secretary, or a teacher. Those were like your three career choices, or you got married and started having a family. Yeah. But World War II marked the first time that the military was open outside of nursing to women. So all of a sudden you had women truck drivers, you had women pilots, you had women working in radar, you had women doing all sorts of different things.
Yeah, because they needed the help and stuff. Yeah,
totally. And they needed all hands on deck. And so they needed to free up roles that men previously had that they could now be turned to the woman. So one of these roles that was I found especially kind of interesting is, and I knew nothing about this before, but basically I'll try not to get too technical here, but there's this system called LONAR, LONAR, and what this system allowed was ships along the coast of North America to maintain radio silence, so they could talk among each other. But the Germans couldn't intercept these messages, which was they were trying to do all the time. So to operate these, for LONAR to exist, there had to be these stations set up where the machines would be monitored. Mm-hmm. So one of these stations was off the coast of Nova Scotia, close to Yarmouth, if you know where that area is at all. And basically 25 women were assigned to man this LONAR machine and make sure it was always running. And if for any chance the Germans landed in Canada, they were explicitly told to light the, there was dynamite underneath this machine, and they were told to light this dynamite and run because this technology could not get into the Germans' hands under any circumstances.
Yeah.
And so out of these 25 women, two are still living. So I was able to track both of them down and got to hear their stories. And it's like this, this desolate area. It's not even a town where they had to live. And they, like, the way they talk about it, like you're really on the edge of the world. And they even told me one night there was a U-boat sighting, because there were U-boats in that, that were off spot off the coast of Canada. Mm-hmm. And there were actually two that were spotted this one evening. And so they're all sort of, it's funny because I got to hear it from both, from two different people who were there, but they both were saying how they're kind of wondering, okay, like, are we going to light these, are we getting ready to light these explosives, and are we going to be ready to run? And I asked one of them, I said, well, like, take me through, what would you have done? The Germans land and they take a step out. And she said, okay, we would have lit the dynamite. We would have run. We all had guns. So we'd have stood our ground and being prepared to fight if we had to, and fire our guns. And I said, you would have been prepared to pull that trigger and fire at them? And he says, yep, I would have done it. So it was just hearing that these women were, and they're in their 90s now, of course, but as young girls, 19, 20, they were ready to, like, defend their country just like that. And
it's crazy,
It's just a crazy thing to wrap your head around. But that was the woman, and they weren't on the front lines, but in a way they were right there. If need be, they would have stepped up to the plate.
That's so awesome. Like, and these are like the things you don't hear about, especially like, you know, our ages, our generation, you know, we're so far removed from World War II.
Yes.
And we never had to experience any of those problems, any of the famine, any of the war on home soil or any of that stuff. We're very fortunate.
Very.
Just our generation alone, but also, you know, just as a country, like for these veterans to fight for our freedom, it's just such an awesome, like, it's just such a fortunate thing. We're so lucky to be living in this country. And it just, every time, like especially always when November comes around, because Remembrance Day, it makes you remember, which is the whole point of it. Mm-hmm. But just even when people, you know, have Twitter feuds, have stuff on social media that they're complaining about, like, oh, that's offensive, or any of that stuff. And it's just, you stop and think about, like, we're so lucky here.
That we just because
these are first world problems that, you know, the generations before us would have never had, because we just don't have problems like they did you know, back in the day. So just to hear that story alone, it just gives you some perspective, like, you know, individuals willing to fight, willing to sacrifice themselves
for Canada.
For people that they don't even know. And meanwhile, you know, our generation is, you know, watching memes and all that sort of stuff. It just blows my mind. It really gives you perspective. So
totally. It's interesting to compare, isn't it?
Yeah. It just blows my mind. And like, even watching some of your little shorter interviews that you had on, like, online and stuff, it just just hearing what they had to say about their journey throughout the war, it just really gives you perspective on life.
Totally.
And then
I was just gonna say, things you can't even comprehend in our lives.
It's a totally different thing. So especially when you're asking questions like, how were you treated when you got back, it's just, those are important questions to ask, because you know, you hear the stories where, you know, veterans aren't treated the way that they should be, because, you know, even if they didn't get a medal, they're all war heroes because they all contributed to, you know, our freedom. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just, you know, I hope, you know, in this country that they're getting the treatment that they deserve for their contribution. But it's really cool to hear, especially that story, because it really gives you perspective. And totally. A story that you never hear in Hollywood, or,
and that was, know, kind of the motivating, the motivating, some of the motivating force was hearing these kind of not very well-known stories, and kind of being able to, I mean, for the whole trip, I had a Facebook page and a Instagram, and I was posting, and just hearing some of the feedback about how they never even knew that Canadians did that or ever even imagined that was part of the war. Was the same reaction I had, but it was just awesome to kind of get confirmation that these were kind of hidden stories that weren't seeing the light of day, and being able to be, I guess, somewhat of a platform for these stories to be shared was, and still is a very humbling experience.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people don't really realize the impact that Canada had on World War II,
not
which
at
is
all.
Another thing, because, you know, you really get the perspective from America because, you know, from the States, because we're so close.
Yeah.
And because of obviously the media. But, you know, to hear the perspective of Canadian World War II veterans and to find out what they actually did, because you do hear the odd story about like Vimy Ridge and stuff like that. But you don't hear the stuff like on the home front and all that other stuff.
Well, also, I think, and this was what really brought home to me at the end of the trip is, I mentioned it before, but I went to France for the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And so there were five beaches at D-Day that the Allied forces invaded. And Canada actually had their own beach called Juno Beach, which I think most people know about. Yeah. But basically... So the Canadian government brought over, I think it was 37, I might have the number wrong, but 37 Second World War Canadian veterans, and they were there on Juno Beach for the 75th anniversary. And just seeing that these specifically Canadian veterans were there, and you see how big the beach is, and you imagine how many more there were that day, it's incredible. And just knowing that that was the Canadian contribution, not putting anything short of the Americans or the British, but we definitely... And I think it's part of our nature is we definitely don't boast about what we did accomplish. But the area that was taken from the area that was captured by the Canadians was some of the first freed French land ever. And it's incredible to think that we had a huge role in, I guess, in a way, saving the world.
Yeah, for sure. And what a lot of people, I think, don't realize is that if Canada didn't contribute the way that they did, it would have came back to North America. So
certainly,
you know, like, so those big movements were very important to the history of the world, as you just said. So that's very interesting. Did you have any, I'm sure you had people on the home front and then in Europe as well.
Yes.
In terms of veterans, like, certainly. What was that like?
Yeah. I think for me, it was, like I was saying, it's important to get all the stories. For me, knowing that my grandpa was someone that was never interviewed because he was a home front veteran, inspired me to still want to talk to those where I think some people wouldn't have, but got some really interesting perspectives from that. But just as many I talked to, ones that went overseas to Europe, and even in that contingency of 37 veterans I'd interviewed prior to the trip, already 22 of them. So it was kind of like seeing old friends, which was pretty
That's
cool.
That's really cool, yeah.
And then while I was there, I got to do a few more interviews, which was awesome. But and I think that it's interesting because I'm in the editing phase, so I'm kind of like figuring out where everything's being put together. But they are such different experiences. But it is interesting because I think that even the ones that didn't see, so to speak, action still suffer from PTSD in the sense that they lost friends, they lost family members.
Yeah.
They were in, like, for example, let's say the two of us went to high school in Victoria, like our grad class would have been, all the boys would have probably joined up unless they had something, they were sick or they had to work on the farm or something. Like so many people in so many people in your life were involved that you couldn't not know someone that died. Like there was just, like death was just so common.
Sure.
So I'd be talking to some veterans who didn't necessarily see the front lines, but just get as emotional, if not more emotional, talking about it because those are such hard memories to think about losing people that close to you.
Yeah.
And that was surprising too, I think, because I think that maybe they don't get the same amount of, they don't have the same amount of medals or they don't get the same amount of
recognition for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Recognition. Like I'm the first one who's ever interviewed them as opposed to some of these, so to speak, war heroes who have, not to say anything wrong of them, but they've told the story many times. But finding the same emotion, if not maybe a more raw emotion, that their voice hadn't been heard before, and getting to hear that was certainly a really special experience.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know who I was it was a podcast that I listened to a long time ago. I don't know if it was a David Goggins, or I don't know if you know David Goggins or Jocko Willink, but they're both like ex-Navy SEALs.
Okay.
But they talked about basically how, you know, for every lone survivor, like the movie Lone Survivor, there's thousands of them.
Yeah.
Which is like, it makes sense. And you don't hear from the other people because they're all affected or differently, or they have PTSD, or they just don't want to relive that.
100%.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that that's sort of what you experienced as well, interviewing these individuals.
And I think also one thing that really came across was, I think in their generation, there's just such a overarching selfishness. Mm-hmm. Selflessness.
Yeah.
Because nobody boasts about what they did. It's like almost sometimes like pulling teeth to find out exactly what they did in the war, because they didn't want to boast about their service. And it's always, I'm not a hero. You should be talking to this guy. Like he's the real hero. But then you hear what they did and it's like, oh my gosh. Like I remember one veteran, he's just casually explaining, one time he was in the Air Force. So one time during one of the flights, and then just nonchalantly, he's like, yeah. And then our wing got shot up, and before I knew it, I fell down to the ground and had to use my parachute. And then and just like carried on. And I was like, wait, let's go back. What, you were shot? You had to like parachute? Tell me more about that. And I'm like, oh no, you don't want to hear about that. Like that was nothing. I was like, no, tell me more about that.
Wow.
Sure enough, like his plane had been hit and he had to pull his parachute, and not his whole crew survived. And it was just like this crazy story that he was totally just going to pass over because he didn't think it was important.
Yeah, that's crazy, eh? Like, yeah. And it must be also not only because they're humble and they don't like want to sort of talk about their contribution, but I think it's also, they've probably all seen so much stuff or experienced so many crazy things throughout their time at war, whether it's on the home front or whether it's abroad, that it's just another event that happened.
Totally. It's just, another day, I guess, which is crazy to think. Whereas if that happened to one of us, it'd be like the event that shaped our life.
Yeah. Like we would have YouTube videos about it, just everything.
Exactly.
Like it's literally like it's crazy. So I also remember seeing you've interviewed a couple people that were prisoner of war.
Yeah.
How was that? Because that's something you don't even hear about a lot either, which is a common thing for war.
Certainly. So, actually, surprisingly, quite a few prisoner of war. I feel like I remember one of the first interviews I did, actually. It was a veteran here in BC, and I knew he'd been taken. Well, I knew he was involved in D-Day, and he had. I knew he'd been taken a prisoner of war. And but the thing is, so we're doing the interview, and it turns out that it was only, I believe, 2 days after D-Day that he was taken prisoner. And I was, so that we're about 20 minutes into the interview maybe, and I said, all right, well then you're taken prisoner, what happened next? And he totally just shut down and said, you know what, I can't talk about what happened in there. And it was kind of like this, I mean, that was the rest of his war. So it was kind of like walking on eggshells for the rest of the interview, because I didn't really know what else to ask, because that was such the elephant in the room, so to speak. So I kind of had to talk about what his family was doing at the time and try not, because the last thing I wanted to do is upset him. And I never want to leave the veterans with a bad impression.
Flashbacks and stuff.
Yeah, certainly. So that was kind of I think that was probably my first prisoner of war I ever did. So that was kind of like a red flag to know that, okay, I got to be really careful when I'm doing those interviews. And since then, I'm just throwing out kind of maybe a random number, but I'd say I've probably done about 40 prisoners of war over my time. And it really ranged in what camp they were sent to in terms of what their treatment was like. So the Air Force, interestingly, were very well respected by the Germans. Like to be in the German Air Force was like to be a god, so to speak. So the Canadian Air Force men were treated quite well in prison camps because they were kind of respected as like the enemy gods, I guess, as lack of better words. The Army ones had it worse. The Navy had it worse. And then the absolute worst were if you were taken prisoner by the Japanese, because they didn't adhere to it was what was called the Geneva Convention. It was kind of like a code of how to treat your prisoners, and the Japanese didn't adhere to that. So I had a number of veterans who were Japanese prisoners of war, and like the malnutrition they suffered and the disease. It was like after some of those interviews, it's just like, you have to make sure you don't think about it too much, because it can even weigh on you. Like, kind of, it's kind of a second degree, like PTSD, I guess, so to speak. Like,
for sure.
Some of these stories are so dark that it's like, oh my gosh. Like, for example, one interview I did in Newfoundland, this veteran's ship was sunk. It was, he was taken prisoner by the Japanese, and he had a really good friend, and the two of them were like kind of buddied up and were like, let's get through this together. Like, this is, we don't know when the war's going to end, but we're going to make it. And his buddy was like, his buddy was British. And he was like, I think he was from Liverpool. And he says, if I don't make it, like, I want you to go back to Liverpool, and I want you to, see my wife and my daughter and just tell them how much I love them and that I tried to make it, but I couldn't. And the veteran I interviewed promised him that. He said, yeah, I'll do that. And so, the British gentleman, he passed away in the camp from, I believe, malnutrition. And so it was just it was just Lloyd left. And so he survived the camp. I think he was in there for like, I want to say like 3 years, and he survived. Wow. He sure enough went to back to England to fulfill that promise. And
that's amazing. The
neighborhood that his buddy was from had been completely leveled during the war, and the house wasn't standing, and the wife and the kid had passed away during those bomb raids. And so literally this entire family had just been wiped off the face of the earth. And if it wasn't for someone like Lloyd telling me the story, like, their memory would be completely gone forever. So that kind of hit home of how important it is to preserve these stories and pass them on, because I think it is so important to know names and to know little personal stories. And like, that little personal story of that family, that's something that always kind of triggers me when I'm thinking about all the lives that were lost in the war, and how thankful we should be that that's not happening to us, and we never have to do that for one of our friends.
Yeah. And a lot of them had to experience that stuff, like losing a friend. And I'm sure when you're talking to people, like, they had, you know, friends that they talked about that probably were lost during the war.
And boyfriends, girlfriends.
Yeah.
And kind of I feel like a reversal of the, so to speak, boyfriend passing away during war. I was interviewing one gentleman, and he's from Toronto, and he goes overseas for his service. He's going to be in the army, and he's really excited. Mm-hmm. And he has to say goodbye to his girlfriend, and little does he know, but his girlfriend's, I guess, worried because he's a bit of a ladies' man. And so she signs up for the Canadian Women's
Army. Oh, no way.
And gets accepted, and she gets shipped overseas, and she surprises him, and he's been well-behaved, and so there's no problem there, but she surprises him at the barracks, and they end up getting married, and I believe it's 3 weeks later, she dies in a bomb raid. And
no way. Wow.
If she hadn't chased after him, that wouldn't have happened. And that's just the kind of the reversal of what you normally think of. And hearing him tell me that story, like, he's still getting choked up about it. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you have to live through that and live with that. Like, imagine the joy of just being reunited with her, one, marrying her, second, and then being faced with, like, never ever seeing her again and still having to fight in the war. Like, it just kind of blows my mind to ever have to be in the shoes of someone who had to experience that.
I couldn't even imagine. It's war is a horrible thing. To go back on the prisoner of war stuff, just because like, a lot of people don't know, and myself, I don't even know how it works. When the war ends, they're forced to release all prisoners. Correct? Is that how it works? Like, how does that?
Yeah, they are, but it's kind of messy, because basically what happens is that, like, they don't want to be. Okay, so let's say, for example, you're in a German prison camp, and it looks like either the Russians or the Canadians or the Americans or the British are going to be in your area soon. So usually the Germans just leave, and then all of a sudden the prisoners find themselves. There's no guards. And so they're like, okay. So either they wait for the forces to eventually come, where they go off into the woods and try and find them themselves. And
oh, okay.
So it's kind of, it's complete disarray and no order. So it's, you'd think it's not clean or tidy whatsoever. It's kind of just like the enemy disappears and all of a sudden you're free. Like there's no okay. Like signing, there's no signing of official papers or anything. It's like just happens.
Yeah, because that's not something you usually hear about, like the transition of like how does one go from
a prisoner,
like, being a prisoner to being free.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a wild thing. Wow. In terms of your interviews and stuff, was there anything that really changed your perspective on stuff? Like any like quotes or like just any thing that you experienced throughout this process that really changed your perspective?
I think it, like, just sort of some of the stories I've been mentioning now, like it sort of changed my perspective on, I guess, two things. One is like what it means to be Canadian, like how I've become so much more proud of to be Canadian and to have my Canadian flag and talk about, if someone asked me what I am, like to say Canadian, because I hear about incredible Canadians and what they went through, and it's like, yeah, like my grandparents did that, and like that generation of people who live in the same country did that. Like I should be proud of that. So that's been a big one. Also, just the, we were talking about this a bit earlier, but just the appreciation of the freedom we have, like the fact that you and I are able to do a Skype call across Canada, and do, like, tomorrow we get to do whatever we want. Just that unbelievable freedom we have to do that, and like we don't have to worry about our girlfriend or our brother or whatever being hurt or harmed, or our own life being harmed, is such an incredible thing. And I think that's what's really important to think about on Remembrance Day, is that, and I think without knowing these personal stories, it's hard to wrap your head around it. So I think, I guess long story short is just an appreciation for the freedom we have and an appreciation for the veterans who sacrificed their lives to their youth so that we could have that freedom.
For sure. Yeah, no, it's a really good takeaway, because that's something that a lot of people take for granted. So
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to your film, do you know when you're going to have it released? Do you have an expected date yet?
So it's a little up in the air. Basically, it's going to be released next year for the 75th anniversary of the end of the war.
Okay.
Because 1945, kind of a nice anniversary. A bit up in
that's the perfect date. Yeah,
perfect date. I say a bit up in the air because it doesn't currently have a distributor yet, so I'm not sure when it will be released or where. But I'm optimistic that I'll find one, and I'm still in the process of raising money for that, whether it's through GoFundMe or approaching organizations to see whether it's something they want to put their name on. That's still a work in progress. But sometime next year, and ideally, well, like the dream, but I don't know if it would ever happen, is I'd love for it to be released locally in a few of the cities that I visited, and maybe have some of the veterans that I interviewed make an appearance, and whether it's just an opportunity to meet a Second World War veteran, or maybe even get them on stage for a question and answer period. I think
that's
awesome.
Be a
pretty incredible way to kind of see the film, but also have that personal connection to literally living history before it's too late.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Mm-hmm. I will do whatever I can to get the word out there. No, because this is just like an incredible, you know, film that people need to see, especially our generation, the generations after the war that never experienced it. And
100%.
You know, to keep those stories alive, no matter what generation it is, like, it's a very important thing to see what these individuals went through, you know, for our freedom. So that's awesome. In terms of donating, where can people donate to support you and your film?
Yeah, you just go to my website, ericbruntmedia.com, and there's a big donate now page that takes you to my GoFundMe.
Okay, perfect. So I'll definitely link that stuff in the show notes. So if you're on the internet, definitely click that. In terms of your film, when people finally go watch the entire film, what do you want their takeaway to be?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think I want their takeaway to, one, be kind of what we were talking about before, like the being proud to be Canadian and call these people Canadians, and knowing that you yourself are a Canadian, having seen this personal face that you can now think about when you take those 2 minutes of silence at Remembrance Day. Hopefully now you'll have a number of faces that you can link that to. And also, I think maybe inspire an interest in your own family history and ask questions of your grandparents and maybe even your parents about their history that you might miss otherwise, because I know this project's made me think of so many questions I wish I asked my grandfather. So if you can do that with your own family history, like, that'd be an amazing takeaway. I hope people learn from it, and maybe just to add another one, the fact that sometimes you just got to, if you have a passion or an idea, sometimes you just got to go out and do it, and that's the only way to get it done. And hopefully my documentary can be seen as a kind of that process of just having that dream and going for it and trying to do it the best you can, and all the pieces lining up and you being able to come out of it with a final product. So yeah, I guess those four things for sure.
Awesome. I love it. I especially love that connecting with your grandparents. Like, that's a huge thing. Yeah. And I think it's something that a lot of people take for granted. I take for granted sometimes too, like just simply reaching out and having a conversation with your grandparents.
Totally.
It's just such a big thing. Like, it's just,
and you can learn so much about yourself by asking your grandpa or grandma, like, what was life like when you were young, and just like hearing the similarities.
It's crazy.
And
yeah.
Like, I guarantee you'll come out of it with more knowledge of who you are and what your family is like.
For sure. Like, even for example, like, my grandpa, you know, he never had to serve in the war because he was in Canada. He was, he's from Trinidad. So that's where he was living. But you know, he had to experience, you know, life during the war. So like, you know, times were a lot tougher. You know, he had to drop out of elementary school to work for the family. Like, that, things were different back then. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to do that nowadays. You know, you get the opportunity to actually go to school. A lot of people go to college too. Like, it's, so it's
hearing those stories of like your own grandparents' sacrifices, and if they're not around to tell their stories, like, your parents will know some that they heard when they were growing up. So and even your parents at some degree might have had to do some sacrifices during their youth. So those are always really important to learn and to preserve in some way, whether it's your own thoughts or you write it down.
For sure. Awesome. So to sort of wrap up the podcast, we're coming to the end. Is there anything in terms of books around this topic, or anything that sort of inspired you throughout your life that you can recommend to people? A lot of times people are looking for books to change their life, whether it's like, you know, self-help books, or like even biographies to learn something new. It doesn't have to be war related or anything like that. Is there anything that you recommend to people to read?
Yeah. I think like it is war related, but a book that I really appreciated that I read during my trip was a book by the name of Forgiveness by Mark Sakamoto. And what that book is about is, it's also written by, from a grandson of a veteran. And basically, this man's, his mother's grandparents, they were Japanese Canadians.
Okay.
And they actually experienced the internment during the Second World War.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they were considered enemy by Canada.
Spies and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's... So they had to go to rural Alberta and live on a farm and kind of had to experience like that dark side of Canada's history. Yeah. And on the flip side, his dad's, I got it mixed up, I think, but when the other side, the grandparents, his grandfather was a prisoner of war for Japan. So he was, he spent the war in, I think it was like 3 or 4 years in a prisoner of war camp in Japan, fighting for his life, kind of experiencing the same things I was telling you about that the other veteran went through. And the book is about how this grandson is a product of both these sides, and how both sides of this family are able to look at the history and look at who they are as people and the personal history they have with each other and forgive each other and what they can learn about it. And it's just, it's really powerful. And it's just such a unique story that he has both those sides to his family history, and I definitely would recommend it for a book about stories you don't normally hear about the Canadian involvement, but also just an amazing way that forgiveness can help us.
For sure, yeah, because that's a really interesting topic. Like, that's a crazy story for his grandparents to be on both sides. Yeah, and that's something that you don't really hear about either, is the Canadian soil part of it.
Totally.
That's really cool. So that's awesome. Is there anything that you wanted to say before we wrap up the podcast? And then we'll get into some promotion stuff.
I think I pretty much said all the messages that I can think of. Maybe this links into what you're going to do next, but if you want to follow along on the adventure, I post pretty regularly on my Facebook and Twitter, Instagram. It's just my name, Eric Brunt Media, and all the good stuff will be on those.
Perfect. And then your website is ericbruntmedia.com. ericbruntmedia.com. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
And then people can donate through there and find out more information about the film. Perfect.
And here are some of these stories that I've been mentioning.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. And then you already have, you know, a few of them I saw on Instagram and stuff like that. So.
And YouTube, and yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, like, definitely I would recommend to everybody that's listening, check these out, especially during the month of November, because it'll give you some perspective.
And some personal faces to attach to those, the Day of Remembrance.
Yeah. Yeah. The last thing that I'm going to ask you is, actually, I have two more things.
Okay. No worries.
The first thing is, in terms of Remembrance Day, is there any like sort of tips where you would give people to sort of how they should spend Remembrance Day?
Yeah.
The month of November?
I'd say for the month of November, try and learn a few stories of veterans that you might not have known before. And especially like those, just like a personal story, like it can be maybe in the newspaper or maybe just looking up online, just what one individual veteran went through. And then when it's the actual Remembrance Day and you take those take those 2 minutes, if you can't do it at 11 o'clock, then find another time. But I would say take that story that you learned about and really picture yourself in that person's shoes and going through all those experiences that they went through and kind of questioning what would you do in those circumstances and why you're there because of what that person went through, I think is really important.
Perfect. I love it. And then the last thing is every week we have a question of the day. So this can be anything you want to ask the audience. It can be about anything. Some people, you know, I always give the recommendation, what's your favorite color, but can do anything.
My question of the day is, what's your grandpa's story? Is finding out what your granddad did and what is his story? Where does he come from?
I love it. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. No worries. Was great to talk to you. We will definitely have to connect when you come to Toronto.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and definitely do that. For sure.
That'd be awesome. Well, thanks so much for the time and interest in what I've been doing.
Yeah, no worries. We'll keep in touch.